All right, well, hey, we're going to be in Matthew 22, verses 34 through 40 today. So you want to turn there, find it in your Bible or on your device, that'd be great. We're in our four-week vision series that we started last week, right? So we laid out over November and December, basically, a multiply vision that we have to run in three ministry lanes. You can look at that on our webpage, on our homepage there. You can click on multiply and see what those three ministry lanes are that we want to run in. But see, last week what we did was we laid out the vision for this year. So we have the vision to multiply for sure, but what's it going to take to get there? And for us, the focus of 2023 needs to be deep dependent worship. And that's what we talked about last week. We have got to learn deep dependent worship as individuals, as a church, if we're ever going to see God move in our lives, in and through us. So we have to deeply depend on God and learn to worship Him alone so that out of the overflow of that, everything else, including multiplication, will come. So we want you to learn to live the upward, inward, and outward life as a Jesus follower. That's what we believe is a healthy follower of Jesus. It's somebody who so deeply depends on God and so worships Him alone that you learn to love Him completely, you learn to love yourself correctly, and you learn to love others compassionately. What I want to do today is talk through loving God completely. Okay, so that's our topic for today. We'll get to ourselves and others in the next 2 weeks, but today we need to see that there is an order to this, and it starts with loving God completely. As a matter of fact, you can go ahead and write this down as your main point for today of the sermon if you're taking notes. God comes first, period. That's the main point of the sermon. It's very straightforward. It's not super catchy, but it's straightforward. It's very direct. God comes first, period. We say this a lot here, but the order matters in Christianity. Okay, it just matters. Like a lot. Like if you don't get the order right, it might be something, but it's not Christianity, okay? It's kind of like math. If you don't get the order right in a math problem, then you won't get the answer right. Have you guys, I've only been exposed to math again because of my 9-year-old, okay? Or my 8-year-old, almost 9-year-old, okay? So I'm remembering what math is like. And if you don't do the problem in the correct order, then you won't get the problem right. Do you remember how this works? You start with parentheses, and then you go to exponents. Remember this? And then you do multiplication and then division from left to right in that order. And then after that, you do addition and subtraction from left to right in that order. Right? You remember this from math, from elementary school? If you don't do the problem in the correct order, then you'll get some kind of answer, but it won't be the right answer, right? So that's what it's like for us as Christians, but it's also kind of what it's like in the human life, just in general. Like life has an order to it. And according to the Christian faith, it's that God comes first, period, and then everything else comes after that. And now we have a bunch of other things going on in our life. I know that. You know, I mean, we ought to learn to prioritize things in our life in an appropriate way. Everything that we do, we ought to prioritize it so that it goes from order of importance down to the least important. I mean, things, we do a million things, right? We go to work. Our kids go to school, or maybe you're still in school, in grad school or college or something like that. Our kids, if we have children, they have sports or extracurricular activities. We have to spend family time with one another. We have church stuff. You guys come on Sundays, you have community groups during the week, and maybe some other stuff if you're leaders or you serve, or then you have hobbies that you need to do so that you can stay sane in your life, and then you have vacations you take and you need to rest, and then you do ministry throughout the week perhaps where you serve other people in certain ways. All of this stuff, and you need to learn to prioritize those things, no doubt. Some kind of order. But there is a danger for us in thinking that we have priorities, plural. That's the danger for us. We think we have priorities that need to be ordered and that God is one of those priorities. You see where I'm going with this? See, we might be thinking of it like a pie chart in our life. Everything, if our life is a pie chart, then God should have the biggest slice of the pie. And that's the danger, because He really shouldn't have any of the slices. He is in every single slice, right? If our life is a pie chart, then He should be over the entire thing, in and through the entire thing. He doesn't just get one big slice. He gets the whole thing. You see? If we're thinking of it like He's a slice of the pie, then we're not doing the math right, if I can put it in that language. The math is just going to be, we're going to get the wrong answer to the problem here. He is the priority. Priority. He's singular. He is the first. Period. He comes first. He is the pie chart. He's everything. He's the list. and the paper that the list is on, right? He's just not just at the top of the list. He's not just number one on the list. He is in and through the entire list. He is the whole thing. We need to understand that. We say things like, we just have to make first things first, or we just have to get our priorities straight, or that's just one of my priorities. But listen, we can't really get any of our priorities straight in the rest of our life if we don't get the number one priority straight. Does that make sense? We can't put first things first if we don't get the first thing first. Does that make sense? Y'all with me on that? And that's what Jesus is saying in Matthew 22. That's what he means here. The greatest commandment is what it's called. That's how it's known, usually, in theological circles. It's to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. God comes first, period. And then everything else will flow from that. And that's what we're going to talk about this week. And like I said, we'll get into loving ourselves correctly and loving others compassionately in the next 2 weeks. So the second half of this scripture. But we'll read the whole thing again, just so that it starts getting in your mind. We're going to read it again and again. But it's short, so I want to reread it to you here in Matthew 22, starting in verse 34. It said, "When the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they came together. And one of them, an expert in the law, asked a question to test him. 'Teacher, which command in the law is the greatest?' And he said to him, 'Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the greatest and most important command. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets depend on these two commands.'" It's a huge statement for Jesus to make. See, this is part of Matthew's gospel where Jesus is getting ready to go to the cross. And so all of his animosity from the religious leaders and all of that, they're starting to really butt heads more and more because he's going to the cross and they're about to try to crucify him. And this is one of those times where all that's ramping up and they're asking him questions over and over to try to trip him up or to test him or to get him to say something controversial or something like that. And they just can't do it, of course. It's Jesus, right? He's Jesus. And there's this ongoing debate that they want to pull him into here in Jewish life about which laws were weightier than others. That's what this religious teacher is getting at here. He wants him to weigh in on the debate. Not that some parts of the law didn't matter and some did, but which ones were greater? Which ones were more important? Which ones were weightier, had bigger consequences, or were more primary than others? Let me give you a one-to-one comparison. I guarantee you, you'll realize it's one-to-one when I start talking about it. It's kind of like ice cream flavors, okay? All right, here, just go with me on this. Ice cream's just good, right? Like, you don't want to throw out any kind of ice cream. I could eat every single ice cream flavor. I might like some more than others, but there's certain primary flavors that I have that I just like more than all the others. Now, all ice cream is important, okay? You don't want to throw any ice cream out at all. You're not going to poo-poo away any flavors. Thank you, I heard that. But there are some that are more important, like Blue Cow's birthday cake ice cream. It's just the best. It's the primary flavor, okay? That is the best flavor. I don't know what else to say. It's the weightier flavor. But you don't want to throw any of the rest of them out, okay? That's not what you do with ice cream. And so the law is similar. You can see the one-to-one here. It's not that some rules didn't matter to them and others did. It's just that some were more important than others, more primary. Let me give you an example. Like, do not commit murder may have been more important or weightier than something like do not commit adultery. Because it's not that do not commit adultery is not important, right? It is, obviously. That's a very important moral law to follow. But one has greater consequences than the other. And one, you're saying you want to value human life so much so there's not a loss of human life. Whereas in adultery, there's not a loss of human life. There's a breach of covenant and promise, but it's different. You see the weight, there's a difference in weight there, and that's the debate. That's what the debate was like, and they want Jesus to weigh in to try to trip him up or say something, you know, something that the crowds are going to turn on him or something like that, and Jesus, far from getting tripped up, he just sidesteps the whole thing. He's like, no, I don't want that. I'm not going to be involved in that kind of debate about the law. He's interested in the heart behind the law, right? So he says that the whole law and all of the prophets hang on or can be summed up by these two statements, love God and then love others. That's what the whole law and all the prophets point us to do. That's their purpose, in other words. That's the foundation behind all of them. At their core, that's what they mean, is to love God and love others. And he basically is saying, you want to squabble over details in a debate that I don't think your priorities are wrong. Your priorities are not straight. You need to have one priority, is to love God and then love other people out of that, and that's it. But you want to, you know, debate which laws you need to follow and which ones you don't so you can look good in front of other people. He's saying, get your priorities straight. And he gets both of these statements from the Old Testament as well. He plucks it straight from the Old Testament that these law people should have known. These religious leaders that are supposed to be experts in the law. He's like, hey, don't you know Deuteronomy 6:5? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And the second one he gets from Leviticus 19. He says, do not take revenge or bear a grudge against members of your community, but love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. That's where he gets both. He quotes almost verbatim both of these things, though the biggest change is that he inserts mind here, or maybe Matthew inserts it. We're not quite sure, because in the Mark version of the gospel, he actually includes mind and strength. So we saw that in Deuteronomy, it doesn't include mind, but I think Matthew might include it for his audience, or maybe Jesus did include it because it's in both Matthew and Mark. People have wondered why it's changed. Honestly, it doesn't really matter. I think it's probably contextual, because if you think about each one of these, the command is to love God with all of yourself. That's the whole point here. So it doesn't change the meaning of the text in any way, shape, or form. It just contextualizes it, perhaps, because listen to this. The heart is used in the Bible to refer to the whole person, right? Whatever's in your heart is what you love. It's at the core of your very being. That's your heart. So it describes all of you, right? And then the soul is the same way, but maybe in a different take, because it's the soul is the breath of life. It's the source of your life. And so it's also used to refer to all of you. The soul is all of who you are in a different way. But the mind is the seat of the will, according to Greek philosophy. That's why I think it's contextual and why Jesus says it to this crowd in particular, because it was the source of all of your faculties and understanding. So what is that? If it's the source of all of your mind and all of your faculties and your ability to understand, it's all of you, right? And then I think strength is the same way. I think strength and mind are connected to one another, because if you go back to our Thought Life series from a year ago, or a year and a half ago now maybe, how you think affects how you live, right? And so what you do with your head, inside your head, affects what's going on with your hands, if we could put it that way. So whether it's heart, soul, and mind, or it's heart, soul, mind, and strength, or whatever other combination you want to come up with, the idea, and you can write this down if you're taking notes, is that God wants our all, okay? That's the idea here. Again, if we start squabbling over these things, it maybe sounds like the religious leaders a little bit, right? Is it this or is it that? Does it matter? It doesn't matter. It's God wants our all. He wants all of you. That's the point. Don't miss the point. You know? Come on. Pay attention to what the text is saying. Pay attention to Jesus here. He wants our emotions. He wants our thoughts. He wants our desires. He wants our actions. He wants the whole thing. That's what it looks like for him to come first in our life. There's nothing that we hold back. He gets it all. God comes first, period. And that's generally what love looks like, isn't it? When we start to try to define what love is and try to understand what love is, it's giving ourselves to someone in totality, isn't it? You know, when a couple gets married, they might even put in their marriage vows, hey, I give you my all, you know? Because love doesn't hold anything back. When you love, you give yourself. Paul says in 1 Corinthians, the most famous love passage of all that's been read at every wedding ever, love is patient, love is kind. Love does not envy, it is not boastful. It's not arrogant, it's not rude, it's not self-seeking, it's not irritable. That one's really interesting to me because we get irritated with how many people all the time, right? It's not irritable. It does not keep a record of wrongs, so it forgives. Love finds no joy in unrighteousness, but it rejoices in the truth. So in other words, it looks the imperfection, it looks the wrongs, it looks the irritation, it looks the frustration right in the face, and it loves anyway because, he says, it bears all things, it believes all things, it hopes all things, and it endures all things. Love never ends. That's how the Bible defines love for us. It's a laying down of oneself, all of those things, giving oneself up in totality because those preferences that we have, not anymore. When you love somebody, you lay down those preferences for the one you love. Right? Those frustrations and irritations that you have, not anymore. Because when you love somebody, you give up those things and say, I'm going to love you more than I love my preferences and the things that frustrate me or irritate me. Those thoughts of bitterness towards those who've wronged you, not anymore. You lay those down to forgive those who've hurt you because you say, I love you to them instead. You're laying your whole self down. All of those things, your preference, your desires, all of that gets laid down for the sake of those you love. This is what Jesus said in John 15. there's no greater love than this, than to lay down your life for your friends. That's what love is. Laying down your life for those you love. So when you love somebody, that's what you do. You give yourself up. I gave myself up to my wife, Tamara, when we got married because of love, right? We gave ourselves up to our children when we had children because of love. I try to give myself up to you guys as your pastor because I love you, right? That's what we do with those that we love. Love presumes and demands self-sacrifice. And what God is saying is that he wants us to love him that way. That's how we're to love God. If we're going to love him, we're going to give ourselves up to him above all else. Isn't that intriguing? That's very intriguing. That's super interesting. Because if we just pause for a second and really understand what that means, God is saying that he primarily wants our love, not our obedience. Now, it's not that our obedience doesn't matter, right? And I'll get to that in just a second. But it's really interesting to get the order correct, isn't it? He's saying his command is to love. What's the greatest command? It's not don't do this, do that, don't do that. The command is to love. Can you believe that? That's the greatest commandment. Love God. There's no doing in that, right? Loving. He wants love. He wants us. That's what he wants. He wants that relationship. We are his priority. Very interesting. And I think that's confusing for many people today. Most people think that if they do certain things to please the powers that be, then you get love. Because that's how our society operates. Do your duty and reap the reward, you know? Hopefully, your good outweighs your bad in the end, so you can please the man upstairs enough to let him let you into heaven or whatever it is. That's how you'll be happy. And essentially what that's saying is what you do is what defines you. Not who you are, but what you do. And God doesn't care about you in that scenario, if that's what you believe. You're saying God doesn't care about you. He cares about what you do. And Jesus is saying the exact opposite. He's saying it's not about what you do, although doing is important. Again, it's not that it's not of no consequence, but as a matter of priority, God cares about you first. He cares about who you are. His love for you, not your obedience. And so you can write it down like this. It's who over do. Okay, again, doing is important, and we'll get to that in a second, but it's the order. You got to get the order right. Make sure it's correct. My relationship with my kids, they don't have to do anything in order to earn my love, right? And I actually don't have to do anything to earn theirs. Now, they might think that way, like if I don't give them candy or ice cream or something like that, they're going to love me more or less or whatever, but that's not true, is it? They love me because I'm their father. That's just what it is. And I love them because they're my kids. They don't have to do anything to earn that love at all, right? There's nothing they can do or don't do in order for me to love them any more or less than I do now. My mom, she always preached that to me when I was a kid. Now, maybe a little extreme. It's like you could even murder somebody and I'd still love you as my child, right? I mean, that's the idea behind love. And it's because of who my children are to me and who I am to them. It's who over do. There's nothing they can do or not do. It's who over do. And that's actually what the Ten Commandments is like for us. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead. No, I don't want to go too far because the Ten Commandments comes next. That's probably why people get love so messed up in our culture, right? It's because they'll get the order incorrect. It's to them, it's do over who, it's not who over do, because all the platitudes of the modern American, love is love and love wins and all of that, you know, I mean, not that any of that's necessarily incorrect, but it's really interesting because they base their worth or the worth of others to them on what can be done. They base their own self-worth on what they can accomplish, or they base the worth of others to them based off of what they can do for them. That's just how it works in our culture. And maybe we fall into that trap sometimes. It's probably why one in two marriages end in divorce in our country, right? It's do over who. It's what can this person do for me? And when they're not doing for me, I'm going to put them out. It's not who, it's do. That's the problem. You know that yard sign that says all that stuff on it, love is love and science is real and all that mess? You know, I love to poke fun at this because it's just, first of all, it's ridiculous that you have to even say some of those things. They're ridiculous statements, but it's totally a rules-based system. It's legalistic. People put that out because they want you to know the rules that they follow. And if you follow the rules too, then you can come in and be in relationship with them. And if you don't follow the rules that they have laid out there for you, you don't come into this house, right? Because in this house, this is what we do. This is what we believe. It's a rules-based system. It's do over who. Every CEO out there, or every businessman or woman who thinks that they can just make a certain amount of money or build a certain size business and then they're good, they fall into this as well. Their worth is wrapped up in what they can build. It's do over who. Man, the abortion debate, I know I'm putting my finger on some things today, sorry, but this is just what it is in our culture. The abortion debate, every conversation centers around the value of an unborn person and what they can provide for the mother, if any value, because if they don't provide value, then they're a life worth disposing of to the culture. But if they do provide value and people want them, then great, they have value. Well, that's a do over who concept. It's what they can provide. It's what they can do for the mother. And if they can't do anything, then they're disposable. If they can do something, then great, bring them in, right? It's do over who. That's our culture today. And it's not that the law doesn't matter. Doing does matter, okay? I'm going to talk about that in a second, but we just got to get the order right. It's who over do. And so for us, God comes first, period. Not following the rules, not obedience to the law, not even right beliefs about God necessarily. And we keep that within the bounds, right? Because we got to understand who God is and what he's done for us. But outside of that, there's a lot of theological debate out there. So not even right beliefs about how to do church, as much as some Christians want to push that and say that. Man, if you don't do things the way we do it, then I'm not sure you're a Christian. Okay, well, I'm not sure you're a Christian then. Because you probably don't understand the gospel if that's where you're at. Sorry, it's getting under my skin. Let me calm down for a second, okay? It's who over do, guys. That's the gospel. But, like I said, I don't want to be one-sided, so let's take the second note. It's also do after who. Okay, does that make sense? So it's who over do, but then it's do after who. Okay, sounds like a Dr. Seuss book that we're getting ready to write here. Let's hold attention well, though. Jesus did say, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Did he not? John 14:15. He said that. So the who will lead to the do as long as the order's right. As long as we get the right order. This is where the Ten Commandments come into play, okay? We actually studied this together before we launched our church about 2 years ago. I think the podcast is still available. You can go on our website or on our podcast and go back to the foundation series, is what we called it, on the Ten Commandments. The audio is not great and all that, but it's there. The commandments inform what we do, right? That's how we all think of the Ten Commandments. But they're really out of a love that we ought to have underneath of that for God first and then for others second. See, the first five commandments are about loving God completely. Don't have any other gods before God. Don't make idols of God. Don't speak idly of God or don't take his name in vain. Keep the Sabbath day holy and then honor your earthly authorities because they represent God's authority in your life. Why do we do all that? Well, it's because God loves us and so we love God in return. That's what he says to Israel. He starts off by talking about how he is their God and he delivered them from slavery in Egypt. He talks about the relationship first before he ever gives any of the commandments. So he's telling them, stop loving other gods. Don't do that. Don't love the gods of Egypt. Don't love the gods that you create for yourself and all of these other gods that are out there, the gods of the people in the land, the Canaanites and all. Don't do that. Love me first. That's what he's saying to the Israelites in this. But then the last five are about loving others as they would love themselves. That's what he was saying to the Israelites. Love others as you love yourself. Don't murder, don't commit adultery, don't lie, don't steal, don't covet or envy what others have. God's saying that if you love him first, then you will love others out of that. That's how the Ten Commandments work. It's the order of who over do, but do does follow who, doesn't it? It's about the order. And then one more thing here, Bob Goff, who's an author, former lawyer, he wrote a book called Love Does. Maybe you've heard of this because it's popular in a lot of circles. It's not bad because the whole premise is very straightforward. Love works itself out. When you love, you will do certain things, right? And so he says, as he sets up the idea of love does, it becomes clear that we need to stop plotting the course and instead just land the plane on our plans to make a difference by getting to the do part of faith. That's because love is never stationary. In the end, love doesn't just keep thinking about it or keep planning for it. Simply put, love does. Right? Love leads to doing or not doing certain things. It does lead to that. It's because you start with the who, though. And in our case, that's God. And you love him completely. and you prioritize him above anything else, then the do follows out of that. You will do certain things for those you love, or not do certain things because of love. This starts with the heart, and it continues with the hands, if we can put it that way. But the problem is, of course, we still find ourselves struggling with that, don't we? I won't make you raise your hand, but who struggles with that, right? I mean, who struggles with putting God first? Who struggles with even loving God sometimes? We know he should come first, but we have all these old desires to make ourselves or other things God above God. This is the battle that goes on in our heart. We sung about it and read about it. Actually, we read some of this from Romans 7, didn't we? It's not an overflow from God that we love certain things. It's that we love them above God. And so, at best, they're in competition with God in our life. And at worst, they're a replacement for God, whatever they are, whatever those priorities that we have, plural, become in our life. He doesn't just become, you know, he doesn't become the thing that's in and around the pie. He becomes one of those slices that is in competition for the other slices. He becomes one of the things on the list rather than the whole list in and through the list. That's what it looks like. Paul talks about that in Romans 7. We do the things we don't want to do. We don't do what we know we ought to do. We're conflicted individuals, aren't we? We've lost our ability to prioritize. And so you can write this down if you're taking notes. Our love priorities get mixed up. That's our problem. We have this priorities problem, right? And they get mixed up. The spouse that we ought to love, because we ought to love our spouse, that spouse that we ought to love becomes the thing that we love above all else, right? That's how it works for us. We ought to love these things. Our kids that we ought to love, they become the idol that we love above all else. That job, or maybe food, or maybe that hobby that we have, or those dreams for the future that we have, or that desire that we have, and then in all likelihood are good things that we ought to love at some level, in a list of priorities there, right? In a list of things, man, they become the primary thing in our life, whatever that is for us. Our priorities get mixed up. We stop loving God the most and love all these other things the most, and he gets pushed down on the list, or he gets relegated to one slice of the pie chart. He's just one of many things, and it's like we're over here making sure that our yard's mowed while our house is on fire right behind us. That's kind of what it's like. That's what it feels like. It's like we're making sure that the hedges are trimmed, but the house is burning down behind us. It makes very little sense, but I think that's the plight of so many American Christians today. It's the plight of every American Christian in some sense, because we have everything we need. We have more than we need, some of us, more than we could ever even want, some of us. And so we're comfortable and successful, and it lulls us into loving other things above God, because that's where we get our source of satisfaction. That's where we get our source of comfort, our source of power or control or whatever it is for us. And it lulls us into loving those things more than we love God. And the house is on fire because, listen, ultimately those things will end. They will not satisfy us forever. The house is burning down. What's going to happen to us when we reach eternity? Are those things going to be able to save us? Are they going to be able to satisfy us forever? I don't think so. So what do we do? Is there any way to make ourselves love God? We know that the problem is that we get our priorities mixed up and we don't love God. The command is to love God. How do we do this? Can we force ourselves to love someone? Can we make ourselves love God? Just try to do the rule better now? Is that what God is asking us? Because we know we don't measure up. We know we're not going to love God completely. And that's one way a lot of Christians live. They get that swirling around in their lives and they just get miserable. And they live under the weight of guilt and shame, right? We're guilty. We're shameful. We know that we don't deserve what God's given us, and this is just our life plight. This is where we're at. It's a very one-sided way to look at the greatest commandment. See, in those moments, we feel guilt and shame. We're thinking we have to follow the command on our own. We're thinking that we have to pull ourselves up by the bootstraps and make ourselves love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. We got to do something. And we're saying, we think God's saying, love me or else. It becomes this religious rule that we have to follow now. We have to somehow make ourselves love God. And here's the bad news. In case you haven't realized it, you can't do that. You can't make yourself love God. You're conflicted. That's your natural state in your flesh. You cannot save yourself. You cannot make yourself love God. You cannot make yourself follow the rules and do the right things or not do the wrong things. You can't do that. But here's the good news. God says that he'll help us love him. God says that he'll do it for us. God says he loved us first. So we can't just make ourselves love God. Rather, loving God is a response to him loving us. So you can write this down as our final note for today. We love God because he first loved us. That's straight up from 1 John 4, verse 19. That's the only way that this works. You got to get the order right. See, it would be like a dictator controlling his people if the command was, love me or else. Figure it out. I don't know, but you figure it out. Love me or else you're going to hell. Love me or else I'm going to punish you. Love me or else. It sounds like, you know, something that North Korea or Russia would be doing right now with their people, right? Love me or else. But when the world was made, who did God value above all else in the creation? Humans, right? Us. And then when we broke the world, what did he do for his most valued creations? Did he lead them to themselves? No, he covered their shame and nakedness. He covered them. And he saved them. And then he set a plan in motion for all of human history that's been working itself out up until this very day, where he's restoring his relationship with his people. Now through Jesus, that's what we know, right? He set this plan in motion to save those he values the most. Ultimately, God would prioritize us more than we could possibly fathom, is what I'm trying to get at. Listen, think about how the Trinity works. God is three in one, right? I'm not going to try to give you the theology here, but just this is what we understand about who God is. Father, Son, and Spirit. Co-equals in eternity, eternally perfect community. Loves one another perfectly, so much so that it's one God with three persons. They're in perfect community. Whatever that looks, we can't fathom it because we don't understand it. But God loved us so much, and he prioritized us so much that he would break that community up. On our behalf, he would send his only son into the world so that we could be brought into that perfect relationship with him. Can you imagine the love that he has for us? He prioritized us. He put us first, period. That's the gospel. Can you believe such a thing about this God that we serve? The good news is God has loved us so much that he made a way for us to love him back. God wants our all, yes, but Jesus gave his all for us to make that a possibility. We do need to do certain things, but only because of who already did everything on our behalf to save us. Right? You guys with me on that? See, Jesus lived the perfect life that we all should live, but we can't and won't and refuse to live. But instead of prioritizing himself and his deity and his godship, he sacrificed himself for us. He laid his life down. He gave his all for us so that we could be brought into the relationship with God forever. He prioritized us over himself. And then he rose from the dead so that one day we can raise from the dead with him. As a matter of order, he came first in that, right? He gave his life and then rose from the dead so that one day many brothers and sisters would follow him. He's the firstborn. And we can follow him into eternity when we believe. And now our only hope is to respond to his love for us. Because his love does demand a response. And no response is a response. But his love for us demands a response. God comes first, period. But it's only because he put us first, period. He prioritized us. How can we not prioritize him? He loved us first. How can we not love him in response? And no, we won't do this perfectly in our life, right? We won't even do this perfectly. Now that he's changing us and making us new from the inside out, we'll do it more. We'll start to see glimmers of heaven and hope and him making us more like Jesus, who lived the perfect life on our behalf. But we won't do it perfectly in this life, but that's okay. Because he's reminding us over and over and over again that Jesus came first so that we wouldn't have to be perfect right now. He's getting us there, but we're not there. And he's right there with us in his spirit, reminding us every single time we fail to love him and to put him first, it's okay. I put you first. That's what he's saying to us. I know you didn't put me first this time, but I put you first. It's okay. Let's keep going. God has done everything necessary to save us in that way. Jesus was perfect for you. So stop putting yourself where God doesn't put you. Stop putting yourself on this pedestal like you got to be perfect. You don't. That's not God's expectation of you. It's not the do, it's the who. The expectation is that you will love him in response to his love for you. That's the first expectation. And yes, you will foster obedience over time. It will happen. You'll start to see, you'll start to change the way you think and live and do all of that. But that's him doing it through you. He gets the glory for that, not you. Get the order right, guys. We got to get the order right. God comes first, period. Not rules, not obedience, not right actions, not even right beliefs. It's who, not do. Love God because he's loved you first. And then he'll change us to live differently out of that. As a matter of fact, it'll change how we see ourselves and others. And we'll talk about that in the coming weeks in the sermons that are coming up. But today, as we close out our time together, if you really do believe that he loves you, I'm going to ask you to do something for a second, okay? If you really believe that it's who over do, and you get that today, and you know there's this struggle going on, you've struggled with this, but you believe that Jesus has lived the perfect life for you, and then he died in your place, and then he rose from the dead so that one day you can raise with him. If you believe that today, and you would say you follow Jesus, what I want to do is ask you to raise your hand right now. Do you believe that? Okay, you put your hands down. Now, the reason that I did that is because sometimes I don't think that we respond to that appropriately. Sometimes I think what we do is we're like, yep, I get it. And then we turn around and we walk away and we go home. What this does is demands a response. I'm telling you, if you believe God loved you first in the gospel, then it demands a response from you. And if you just sit there and you don't worship with your whole heart, or you sit there and you don't respond in a tangible way, then you're not getting it. You're not letting it sink deep down into your heart today. And so I wanted to make you just take a step of response just in case you don't on your own. That's a response to say, do you believe that? I do. I do. I'm in. That's me. That's my life. That's what defines who I am now. And of course, we'll take communion here in just a moment, and that'll be another response. What we call our first step of obedience for the week, where we respond to the gospel and say, yes, I believe Jesus has done everything necessary to me. I understand the gospel, and now I'm responding to that. I'm identifying with him in that. That's what communion is a symbol of for us, and we'll take that here in just a second. But listen, for others of you, and I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand. I don't want to embarrass you, because it could be some of the ones that, it could be some of us that raised our hand. It probably is. But listen, answer this question in your heart today. Are you living a miserable Christian life? Are you miserable? You say you follow Jesus. You say that you love him and that you understand his love for you, but you're just miserable. You just kind of don't, you don't experience God. Maybe it's like we said last week, you're dry. You feel dry. And you're not experiencing God the way that you feel like you should, or you could, or maybe you did in the past, or whatever it is for you. Is that you? Until you're open and honest about that with yourself and with other people and with God, maybe you haven't even been dealing with it with you and God. Until you're honest about that, it's never going to change. I can stand up here all day and preach about his grace to you, and it just won't change the way that you're thinking or the way that you're living. You need to respond in a very tangible way. You need to lay those things down before his feet. Maybe for you, you're miserable because you're holding things back from God. You're holding yourself back in some ways. Maybe you're trying to hide sin in your life. Maybe that's what it is for you. Maybe there are idols that you just don't want to let go of, and you know it, and you haven't confessed it to anybody, much less to yourself or to God. You need to deal with those things. Or maybe you're miserable because you just aren't actively living out your faith. Maybe you know you ought to be sharing with other people. You know you ought not be ashamed, but you kind of are. You're scared. You're letting fear dictate you. What do you love more than God today? Be open about that. You love something. You've prioritized. We have priorities. Right? Be open and honest about that. What is that for you today? What are you prioritizing above him today? We got to deal with those things. Maybe you're miserable though because you're not around other believers enough. Maybe you don't have that community of believers You're not building deep relationships with others who can speak this grace over you when you need it the most. And Pastor Michael, who's one of our other pastors here, he said that he heard a pastor say it this way one time: to the extent that you want God to be at work in your life, that's the amount you need to be involved in the local church. I told you last week, I'm not trying to gather a gathering for my sake. I'm doing this because I believe in the local church. I know I need community. I told you last week, I didn't have to plant a church, and I really mean that. Sometimes I'm wondering why I did, just to be honest. Now, it's not because I'm frustrated with any of you, it's hard. It's a hard thing to do, but I believe so deeply that Roanoke needs that kind of community, that we're going to build that here, because the gospel compels me to do some things. The gospel compelled me to plant this church with a group of 20 other people who God compelled to leave their homes and their jobs and come here to do this. Man, let's let that ignite deep dependent worship in our hearts, guys. Let's let that ignite the mission of God here in Roanoke. And I pray that it'll happen in other churches around Roanoke too. But I want it to happen here for us. So make sure you sign up for community group or DNA group before you leave at the regroup tables out there in the lobby, because you need that kind of community. And other people in Roanoke desperately need that kind of community. And we're here for that. Also, don't forget that we're taking the next 21 days. We've already been into it for a week, to pray and fast together. You can find out more about that on our webpage as well. If you go to our homepage, you can click on the 21 days of prayer. That's important for us because we're going to get to deep dependent worship when we learn to deeply depend on God and worship Him alone. And so the 21 days of prayer is a part of that. Make sure you're praying with us. Listen, don't leave here today without taking a step toward response. God comes first in your life, period, or He doesn't. There's no in between. So take a response today. Take a step of response.